Hey, you guys, it's your host, Julian. Happy Halloween, folks. What better way to celebrate than to talk Courage the Cowardly Dog with series creator, John Dilworth. I want to give a special shout-out to all the patrons that help support this podcast. Bill, Brent, Brittany, A-Legged Bird, and Jacob. Thank you all so much for your support. It truly means a lot. If you want to become a member of our Patreon channel to help support this show and get all these episodes early and ad-free, follow the link below and sign up today. Now, let's get to that chat with John. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to What's in My Head podcast. Today I'm joined by John. John, long time coming. Welcome to the show, sir. How are you?
Thank you, Julian. Thank you for having me. I'm delighted to be here, and I am very well.
I'm delighted to have you here, man. So I gave you a little bit of a heads up on what we were going to talk about before we hit record. So this is the only short, the only series that ever got any kind of nomination for the big Academy, the Oscar Award. You know, I had quite a few people on not too long ago to talk Courage. A lot of people that worked on Courage, and I posed that question. There was no real answer. Now, I know this cartoon was special to me and special to so many other people, but why do you think this one, why do you think the pilot stood out so much that you guys got an Oscar nomination? Congratulations on that, by the way. I know that's 30 years in the past, 25, excuse me, in the past, but why do you think this one got an Oscar nomination?
Well, the only person that you spoke with that would have anything to do with the short was Linda Siminsky. Mm-hmm. Without her, we would have no Courage.
Yeah.
That's a whole story on itself. But that's after the short. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But the short, there's no mystery to it, really, in my mind. I don't want to sound casual about it, but I'm an independent filmmaker. I just make independent films. The Chicken from Outer Space was an independent film. It just happened to be a kind of short film that made it easy to monetize. I mean, it was turned into a product. Very few of my short films were able to do that. Noodles and Ned, they did transition. We did a bunch of preschool shows for Sesame Street with Noodles and Ned. And that was, and then also a spinoff called Ace and Avery, also a preschool show. So it's rare that an art film, an independent film, could be commodified. And it, I don't know, you know, it wasn't a formula. I didn't work off a formula. I just wanted to tell a sci-fi movie. I love sci-fi. So I wrote one. So the original was black and white. I just wanted to do it in black and white, like a satire, the 50s, in our great American hysteria over terrorism, or the other, right? The other, let's say. And they were all in black and white, you know, Forbidden Planet and spaceships that come crash into Washington, D.C. and all this stuff. And I pitched that to Fred Seibert, who was a maestro at this type of thing. Do you know him?
Oh, yeah. I've had him on quite a few times. He's a wonderful great. Human being.
Yeah. So he was shopping around for a new product for a program he was doing out of Hanna-Barbera. And I got wind of it because I just finished The Dirty Birdie. And I was still paying that film off. So this new short film, I really needed funding. So it's one of the few short films I took money to make that was still an independent film. But I guess if I take money for it, it's not an independent film anymore. But I always treated it like that, Julian. I never thought it was anything more than just a short film. And Fred liked it. And he set me up with his Hanna-Barbera people. Ellen Cockrell specifically was my handler. Mm-hmm. And we made some small changes. Originally, the farmer had a shotgun, like in the old Warner Brothers cartoons, right? Where, you know, somebody always had a big shotgun. It was always going off and people, you know, feathers, duck bills. I mean, it didn't matter, dogs falling, and they just get up. It was nothing. Right?
Yeah.
So I was doing an homage to that. I mean, I love the golden age of Hollywood cartoons, MGM, Warner Brothers. I don't know if you feel the same way, Julian, but I just really love that stuff.
Oh yeah, they're
And it wasn't
classics.
made for cart. They weren't for adult. They weren't for children. They were adults. They were playing in theaters. They were for adults. But then they transitioned into television Saturday, and kids were getting into it. And then you get all the other stuff that follows, right? Some cartoons are maybe too risky to show. So yeah, so the farmer had a shotgun that I had to go. So I replaced it with a mask and used that instead of a way to terrorize the dog. And then we did it in color. So those were the only two big changes we made from the short film that the network preferred. And I was accommodating. So Margaret Fry, she and I had been working with MTV and a bunch of pilots that I was creating. And she's just a great art director. I loved her. Among on the TV series, she went on to do the title cards of all the shows. She did all the shows, 104 title cards. And Andrew Koval took over the art directing. He's another genius. I love that guy too. I really grow attached to people through their talent, right? So yeah, the chicken from outer space. So I made the short. I made the short, and I do what I do with all my shorts. I submit them to film festivals all over the world. And the Academy decided that this particular short, for whatever reason at that time, was worthy of a nomination.
What did it feel
And
like?
yeah, I don't think it was real. I didn't believe it. I was in the home of my sound designer, Michael Geisler. He did all the sound for the series, and he did most of all my independent shorts, Michael Geisler. And I think I phoned to hear the list. You can do that then. And I just like, what, really? Chicken from outer space. And there was a really strange incident that happened to me after that. After I got the nomination, I knew that also Hanna-Barbera knows. And I was due to go to the studio. So I was driving from Michael's to Burbank to go to the Hanna-Barbera studio. And I come across a dog laying in the street. And I pull over, I pick the dog up, and I go around to the local homes, knock on the doors, ask people if they recognize the dog. Nobody did, which was surprising if it was a neighborhood dog. So finally, a neighbor and I, we phoned the city, and they came and they collected the dog. And then I thought to myself, well, my own pink pooch lips. But this one didn't, right? So there is this, what is it? A phenomenon of opposites, right? This eternal opposites that's always keeping the balance of the universe, right? That's if one is thinking about it. Yeah, so there it is. There's not, it's just luck.
I don't know, man. There was a lot of skill put behind that. I mean, being a kid at that time when the What a Cartoon shorts are coming out, and I'm seeing Dexter and I'm seeing Powerpuff Girls and I'm seeing Johnny Bravo and I'm seeing Courage the Cowardly Dog. I've had a
Cow and
couple of
chicken, don't forget David Fleiss.
oh, Cow and yet, oh, you can never forget David Feiss. I mean,
Yeah, with
Cow and Chicken.
that devil.
Oh, dude, the red guy, Charlie Adler, absolutely
Yeah.
crushed it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's such a fascinating time. That era of cartoons really molded me. I don't remember Nightmares until Courage kind of came into into the picture. I know a lot of people have talked about it being nightmare fuel, but it was just something really cool about seeing this dog that was so terrified of everything. But Marty said it best at the 11th hour. He cashed in all of his chips essentially, and he became courageous. He became, this hero to the people he loved the most, Muriel, and to a lesser extent, Eustace,
Yeah,
man.
I don't agree with that interpretation, but it is an interpretation. The idea that someone just grows courage or bravery, it's already there.
Yeah.
What's missing are the motives.
Do you think the stakes?
The call to action.
Mm-hmm.
Courage is always brave. He's brave. He's just there. That's his default. He doesn't get conjured up. He just simply decides when to act.
When to turn it on. Gotcha.
Necessity, motive. Right. We're animals of stimulation. When do we get turned on? He, you know, that's the thing about being brave.
Mm-hmm.
You already are.
Yeah.
The thing that differentiates the coward from the brave is that willingness to act.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Can't disagree there.
Yeah, it's just too simple. And horror is the great motivator.
Yeah.
It's essential for society. It teaches us morality.
Was that something that you wanted to put through courage, was teaching those morals?
I'm not a pedagogue. The show isn't about pedagoguery. I just wanted to do themes that interested me.
Mm-hmm.
And I just put my 12-year-old knickers on and made cartoons for 12-year-olds.
Because
that's how I feel. I feel like, you know, the kid that's always causing trouble, but quietly in the back.
Oh, I can imagine. We can all tap into that little bit of our younger selves. I was that same little rabble rouser that would sit in the back and want to make jokes with my friends and hang out and, you know, cause chaos, man, controlled chaos. You know, something I didn't know about, you know, was the fact that you pitched it in black and white. Did you, obviously it was your show at that time. I mean, it's your show. But how did you choose the color palette? Was there anything that stuck out? Was there any kind of influence from movies, TV shows, music maybe? What was it about this color that I'm running right now? Is that courage pinkish purple color?
No, courage is not that color. That, first of all, there's so much contamination. I'm not sure what that color is. But I appreciate it, though, the fuchsia, you know.
Yeah.
The thing is, color, the color of courage, the dog himself, mm-hmm. I always thought he was pink.
Yeah.
Pink being a kind of controversial color regarding its virtue.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, I was always thinking about what would be the contradictions, just thinking of contradictions. I mean, blue, yeah. Violet, the purple would be, you know, the warrior, the knight. So we didn't want those. Brown mm-hmm. is just, that's, well, that's another dog altogether. No, he had to be not yellow, the SpongeBob. So, you know, I just wanted something that was like trans.
Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah. Did
the
you have any
color pink was it didn't marketing people didn't get with it. They, mm-hmm. they really believed that they wouldn't be able to sell a pink dog to boys.
Boy, were they wrong.
It really caused trouble. It really caused us some marketing trouble. So he became fuchsia.
Mm.
No,
now,
it's
did you ever?
You got to figure out a way to sell your gear. Mm-hmm. And there's a stigma, you know, there was then 25 years ago, stigma. With color specifics. I think it still goes on today. Blue never fails to impress, right?
Yeah, I mean, I guess so. My favorite color is, you know, it's been yellow, you know, so I really enjoy that color. It makes me feel good. You know what I mean? So it's breaking those social norms in a sense. You know, since we're talking color, man, I find it so fascinating that this was originally supposed to be done in black and white. Did you ever try to do an episode that was solely black and white or a season that might have pushed that black and white?
No.
No.
No. Because I was in love with color.
Yeah.
Especially the colors that we were developing with Andrew and the crew in the art department. And I didn't want to lose it. I didn't want, and also there wasn't as I th maybe we did something a little bit black and white. I can't remember. But there has to be a reason to do such a try. And nothing comes to mind about it. Black and white. No. I mean, I am a great admirer of films like Annie Hall and Manhattan, and I mean that are comedies. And of course Abbott and Costello meets Frankenstein.
Yes.
That's black and white.
It's one of my grandpa's favorite movies. I remember watching that one quite often when I was younger.
That great? Those kids are just great. That was a big influence.
Yeah.
Yeah. To marry the comedy and the horror.
Which one do you think you leaned into more? Was it comedy or horror?
Oh God, horror is no big deal. It's finding the irony. Comedy always. Mad Magazine, when I was a puppy, with Mort Drucker and Don Martin and Sergio Aragonés, I mean, they just imprinted upon me. They were masters. Did you read that? Did you read the those
I
next year Mad
saw some
Magazine?
I saw some the my introduction to Mad Magazine was I don't know if you remember Mad TV, but the Spies versus Spies, and then that kind of made me think like, oh, that's really cool, and then it led to looking at those more so than anything. I got to see some of them in high school. They would have some of the magazines, but it wasn't something that was readily available in my area, no.
Oh yeah, that's too bad. Well,
Yeah.
anyway, we're just talking influences.
So
So I would
who was some of those other influences that kind of helped you along your way?
Well, we just brought them. We've mentioned quite a few. Yeah, I think we mentioned them all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now with The Courage and the Pilot and that being said, when this series starts to move to a season now, you're picking up the series, you're working with Hanna-Barbera. There wasn't too many of you guys that were able to work outside of Burbank and LA. I think David Feiss up in, Washington when he was doing Cow and Chicken, and you were the other guy over in New York doing the production for Courage. What was it like having to, I'm assuming you'd had to fly back and forth from New York to LA during the production?
No.
No, you did the whole series out there in New York.
Of course, those series was done in stretch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, was that a sticking point for you? Did you want, obviously you did probably didn't want to go out to LA because your home is out in New York, but did you ever have any kind of inclination to go out that way?
No, because I'm an independent guy from New York, and my studio's here, and we do things differently in New York.
What's it about the city that really speaks to you, especially when it comes to animation and your independent filmmaking?
Well, just look at the expressive itinerants that run up and down the avenues. You get all this motion in there, the way they run, the way they
Yeah.
express themselves. And New York is full of these. They may even be normal people talking on their whatever these things are. The thing is that it's all here for you.
Yeah.
It's accessible. They are direct experiences. When I travel to LA, and of course I've been many times, I'm in a car, or I have to stop and then go into a building. Or if I'm on the best places for me are always on the ocean and in the Mulholland Hills, or in nature.
Yeah.
But New York City is just, it's built for getting in people's way. And it's really up to the participants how that comes off. You know, on the subway, one is always advised, don't look people in the eye. But what if you do? Wink. See what happens.
I love it, man. So there's two stories, and then we'll wrap it up here, man. But I heard it from Jody, Jody Gray, and then I heard it from
Oh
Andy
yeah,
Lenahan. So
he's great. He's great. Love that.
I loved the story he told me, because Jody had mentioned it with his episode, and then when I did the reunion, Andy had brought it back up that Andy, when he first started working with you guys would have these wrestling matches. Like, Andy would hide behind the couch and jump out, and you guys would wrestle. Now, going back 25 years and you guys wrestling, who would get the better of each other? Would you get the better of Andy? Would Andy get the better of you with these wrestling matches during the production of Courage?
I don't know, but did you ever see the Pink Panther series with
Yes.
Peter Sellers?
Yeah, it's been a little
And he
while.
had this house boy, this
Yes.
house man that was always hiding somewhere. And when Clouseau entered the house, he knew that somewhere this little imp is gonna come out. And that was Andy. It was just falling out of the ceiling or underneath a chair or something. It was great. Yeah. What else did the boys say about those studio?
Oh, no,
Did he talk
there's
about the ladies?
No, he didn't talk about the ladies.
Oh.
The thing they brought up, because there was nine of us on that. I think there was like eight or nine of us on that call.
Yeah.
But Jody said you had a way of saying when something was perfect. You'd sit there and you'd listen to the score of when they were composing, and then he's like, you would get up, you'd hit the desk, you'd say, "That's it," and then you'd walk out. And then if it wasn't right, you'd get up, you'd hit the desk, say, "That's not it." And then Jody was like, "Well, what do we do?" He's like, "I don't know, but it's not it." And then you would go about and start doing the other stuff that you were doing. So it was the only thing we really talked about when it came to the wrestling. But it was like he really enjoyed you pushing it, because if it wasn't perfect, it wasn't going to go out. If it didn't go out because it wasn't right, it was not going to go out. So
Now,
they
the
had nothing but
music,
great things to say about that.
you remind me, the music stage was my favorite stage. I would look forward to it. And it always happened in the evening. Gray Noise, they had a studio in Times Square. And so even going to Times Square to do your music, it was just gorgeous, right? And we would just work all night. And Jody was a He never slept. He's a sort of vampire, something like this, one of these somnambulists. And it was just improv. They would play, they would experiment. It was like kids, and we really were kids just playing. We had such a beautiful time to have that freedom to just invent creative things. And I mean, I was fortunate enough to have their masteries. So it's so easy to hear something you like, when it's being created. So my job was so simple. They really are masters.
Oh, man. That's great to hear, because it was really cool just getting to hear how music kind of makes its way into animation. Because before I did this podcast, or started this podcast, it was, I thought one person did like everything. One person drew, one person, voice acted. They did the music. They did all of this stuff. And it wasn't until I started peeling back these layers and really started reading about animation that how segmented and but how collaborative everybody was. So hearing the process on the music side, I don't get to talk to too many composers when it comes down to the show. But when I do, I love being able to listen to how they approach a scene, what they see, how they hear it, and what they interpret that into what they're watching on the screen. So it's always a fascinating topic. Another thing that I love talking is when you start putting the right people in the right spot. Now, obviously we talked a little bit, or I'd mentioned Marty a little bit, but there's one more person that I would like to bring up. And that's Thea White, because I heard some great stories. I had David Stephen Cohen on shortly after she passed away a couple years ago, and he had some really cool stories to say about Thea. But when you think about that name Thea, does any story come to mind, or any interaction, or any moment you had with her that you really hold close to you?
I think I did a memorial for her on my YouTube channel. You could listen to that. But Thea was an anomaly for me because she wasn't Scottish. And then what she was able to do, but she was married to a Scottish gentleman. And she just made it up. I mean, it wasn't any accent that came from Scotland, but it sort of worked. And then why not? So for me, the biggest I mean, the anecdote for us as colleagues was her improvisational skills.
Yeah.
And she was an act. She was an actor. She really embodied the voice. I don't know if she was thinking of the design of the character, but she certainly came. She became the character when she was in the booth. It was lots of fun. You never knew, and also the variety of her takes. They were never the same.
Yeah.
Of actors that, you know, they do this, you ask them to do a line and do a different line, it's the same line. But Thea, she would just give us beautiful sounds, different inflections here and there, and you couldn't get her to redo it again exactly the same. So it was lots of fun. She was just lots of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I got from everybody, that she was such a sweet person.
Well, there are people like that on the world.
Yeah. So, you know, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. The thing is that for this show, we had just like 99% really just wonderful people. I mean, Risa Neuwirth, who was my longtime assistant producer, she took over the casting for me. And just did a great job, and we don't recognize the support of these people. When I think about it, I can't think about it. There's too many gorgeous people.
No, I can imagine. Takes a village to really raise this animated project to be what it was.
New York City.
Yeah. You know, as we start to wind down here, there is a question I always like to ask everybody. Now. Yeah, I like to ask everybody this question, man. When you sit back and you think of Courage and the 25 years you kind of spent with that little dog that, you know, everybody just loved, man, what comes to mind? I mean, obviously you went from making this from a short to a series, that it gets nominated, it goes an extended period of time. You know, there's not one episode I could look back and think that, man, they phoned it in on that one. Everything felt like it was amazing. Everything felt like it was meant to be when it came to Courage, man. But what is it like for you when you think about Courage and those 25 years of spending with Kerim?
Goes by fast.
Yeah.
Life goes by fast. You think it's, you know, life, they say life is short, but I say it takes a long time to live. But when you do a show and, a quarter of a century passes. How do we get our heads around that? I don't know. The thing is that we're too busy living to keep track of time passing. I've been thinking I think somebody is playing with the available time we have. I mean, some new technology that's compressing it so that, you know, you don't have as much time as you used to get even a small amount of work that one used to do. So it's all these references of the past. So it's like the inside of wine bottles, that they thicken the inside to get less volume, but you're paying for, you know, I don't know. I think the technologies can do many things now.
That they can. If you could go back and
Courage story.
If you could go back and tell yourself anything 25 years ago before the production of Courage starts.
I'm not even interested.
No?
No. No, because it's always about forward. It's always moving forward. Life moves forward. It doesn't move backwards.
Well, sometimes it can. If you think hard enough, Back to the Future. That was a joke.
Yeah. And recently I've been reading some wormhole experiments. I don't know what we're meant to believe, you know, that there is a way to, at least mentally, if not physically, but mentally go back.
Yeah.
I've been reading crazy things like that. I mean, why not? We make everything up anyway.
That we do, man. We're creatures of habit. Like I said, John, this has been a long time coming. We've been talking off and on for the last couple of years, so I'm glad we finally got to sit down. And like I said, thank you for a childhood worth living, man. I tell everybody that because when I have somebody on my show, it truly means a lot because these cartoons really helped shape and mold us. They gave us, whether you guys set out to or not, they gave us ways to problem solve. That we got to see this guy. This dog, you know, that was scared, but he always had to come up and do the courageous thing. You know, that's why his name was Courage, man. He was courageous when we couldn't be, and we got to shoulder that strength, and we had to shoulder that, and we got to see somebody else do that. So, like I said, from the bottom of my heart, man, thank you for putting this team together and giving us this brilliant show that was Courage.
Yeah, there's so many people to thank. You can't thank them all,
Yeah, that
right?
we
But
can't, man. But we can go and look at the credits whenever they roll. Next time you take a look at the any Courage episode, folks, pause it and just look at those names that really helped work that.
We need to thank Cartoon Network and the executives that believed in us and
Oh,
just
absolutely.
produced the show. They are ultimately the one responsible.
Absolutely, man. And like I said, you guys had a huge part in our childhood, so thank you for that. Are you working on anything now that you can we can push traffic towards? I know a little while ago you were working on a project. Are you still working on that one?
Yeah, that film, Howl If You Love Me, it's a romantic horror comedy, and I'm touring. It's all over the world, and we're just beginning. It screens at underground festivals and horror film festivals, and we're so super happy that the reception has been so welcoming, having a lot of fun. And if you, I know there's a plan. I think it's happening in New York City at the end of October. If you're in New York City, keep an eye out for the New York Halloween Film Festival. They are doing a Courage Scare-a-thon night. I think it's going to be at Lincoln Center. And I don't know, this may not come out in time, but
Oh, it will.
they're going to
We'll
show
push it out.
Howl, of course. It's
Okay.
in the body of the festival, but then they're doing a separate night to honor 25 years of Courage, and I'll be there. And they'll show, I don't know how many, half a dozen great Courage cartoons in a beautiful theater, projected, not on your TV, not on your little. So Howl If You Love Me, that's we're expecting a Blu-ray soon of all my independent shorts, and Howl will be on it, and so will Goose in High Heels. I've kept these films off the internet because I want them to be seen in a special way. But that's it. That's what I'm doing. I'm howling.
I'm howling, man. We'll put links for that all in the show notes. So, ladies and gentlemen, just point click if you're in that area. Make sure you get out there. It's a once in a lifetime opportunity. Well, John, like I said, thank you so much. He's been John. I've been Julian. It's been a What's in My Head podcast and been another piece of your childhood. Good night.